This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When House Speaker Shap Smith, who's recently declared his intent to run for governor, announced that he's now in favor of marijuana legalization, many pot advocates cheered. They say the Vermont House has been a major sticking point in getting any kind of legislation up for full debate, and Speaker Smith's announcement that he will not just allow a bill to come to the floor, but support one, is a big sign. Not everyone is pleased. They wonder why the state wants to legalize what they consider a dangerous drug that teens in Vermont already use at higher than average rates. They worry that rates will rise, especially among young people, if it is legalized. Drugged driving and over-commercialization are other areas of concern. Today on the program, we're going to look at how the idea of legalization is advancing in political circles and why at least one advocate is planning to up and move to the state to urge its passage. We'll also hear from an organization that opposes the idea, and we'll talk with a legislator and the commissioner of the state health department. Listeners, if you want to weigh in, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm joined now by Matt Simon, New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Hi, Matt. Nice to have you with us. And you're the one who plans to leave New Hampshire and move to Vermont to advance legislation on marijuana legalization. So why are you so fervent in your belief that this is a substance that should be legalized rather than just decriminalized?
Well, good afternoon, Jane, and thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm very excited about what's been happening in Vermont. It's really unlike anything we've seen anywhere else in terms of policymakers and really the entire state getting engaged in this issue and having a robust statewide conversation about not just should this be done, but how could it be done? What would this look like in Vermont? And really having that conversation before something gets put on the ballot, or which it can't be in Vermont, it'll have to go through the legislature. So we've seen four other states pass marijuana legalization via ballot initiative. The states have had to then begin the process of having that how conversation. Vermont's been talking about the how all year, ever since we got the RAND report. And compared to what's been happening in New Hampshire, where the public support is very strong, but our Senate and our governor have simply shut down the conversation and won't allow that kind of statewide debate. They don't even want to see the data, whereas Vermont, everybody's having this conversation I've wanted to see for so long. So I've been coming to Montpelier the last 4 years from my perch in New Hampshire, and I'm making the move here in just a few months. I'm really excited about it.
And that RAND report commissioned by the state to look at what it would look like if Vermont legalized marijuana, to look at some of the upsides and the downsides, not to advocate in one direction or another. And we've covered that before on this program. We'll have links at vpr.net for people who want to read more. Matt, I know that you can talk about this, you know, for hours, but what's your sort of main bullet points of why you think marijuana should be legalized?
Well, we simply believe that prohibition has been a failed policy. The RAND report told us that between 60,000 and 100,000 Vermonters already use marijuana at least once a month, estimated that they're consuming possibly up to 55,000 pounds of marijuana per year and spending somewhere around $175 million on marijuana each year. So I would compare that to the historical example of alcohol prohibition. We didn't make alcohol legal again in the 1930s because we decided it was harmless and safe. People knew that alcohol was harmful, but they realized their choice was not between people drinking and not drinking, just like our choice today is not between people using marijuana and not consuming marijuana. It's here to stay, and we have to choose between a prohibition model, continuing a failed policy, or moving to a sensibly regulated model, which is where I think Vermont and other New England states are moving.
You know, a lot of people say if you legalize it, then it just follows sensibly that more people will use it, that, you know, maybe prohibition is a failed model, but it certainly still is a deterrent for at least some people. And we'll talk specifically about teenagers in a moment. But, you know, if you're of the persuasion that says this is a dangerous substance, it's not good for your health in many cases, perhaps with the exclusion of having a doctor's note. So why should we encourage its use?
I think it's two separate conversations between what's likely to happen among teenagers and what's likely to happen among adults.
Yes.
I think there will be a slight increase. You know, certainly some adults will probably, if there's a store they can go to and buy a regulated product, they're more likely to try it under that circumstance. But so far in Colorado and Washington, the states conduct their own surveys, the Colorado Healthy Kids Survey, and the Washington Health Department has an analogous survey, and they have not found an increase in teen use.
But before we get to teens, what about that idea of adult use? If people are saying, but this isn't a healthy substance, and you're saying legalize it and more adults will use it, why is that okay?
Well, the term healthy is relative. I mean, I think there's no question at this point that marijuana is objectively less harmful than alcohol. And the RAND Corporation's report bears that out. And the RAND Corporation actually says that if marijuana use doubled, but alcohol use reduced by 10%, that would actually be a win for public health. I'm paraphrasing here. But the harms associated with alcohol abuse are so much more extreme than marijuana use. I mean, 6 Americans per day die from the effects of alcohol poisoning. There's never been a death associated with overdose in the history of marijuana use. And I would argue any area where we would compare marijuana and alcohol, I mean, cannabis is less habit-forming. People who do form dependence on it have an easier time quitting. It's just, much less harmful than the drugs that we already have available today. And I'm not going to say it's harmless because it isn't, but less harmful than alcohol and far less harmful than tobacco.
I'm talking with Matt Simon. He's New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project. In just a minute, we're going to be talking with somebody who's opposed to the legalization of marijuana, and then we're going to get some perspectives from state government. If you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, you can share your opinion or you can ask a question. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. So, turning to that question of youth usage or teen use, health department statistics say that compared to other states, Vermont actually has the highest prevalence of past 30-day marijuana use among 12 to 17-year-olds. In other words, more teenagers are using marijuana or have used it very recently than in any other state. We got a question from Mariah. She says legalization will increase Vermont's already high marijuana use rates for youth and adults. Research very clearly shows legalization increases access to the substance. Why would we want to increase the marijuana use issues Vermont already has? And what kind of benefit could Vermont possibly get from legalization that would justify this kind of public health risk? So what do you think about that, Matt, in the context of more teens perhaps seeing this as a substance that is something that they'd like to try?
Well, I think I disagree with the fundamental assumption. I think prohibition's failed teens just as much as it's failed adults. I'll go back to when I was in school. They told us it kills brain cells and it's a harmful drug just like heroin. And I think we've come a long way since those were the messages. But what has changed is the fact that kids today have access to technology. They have smartphones. And if you tell them something that's not true about marijuana, they're able to fact check that. And if they realize that they've been fed a bill of goods by well-intentioned adults trying to steer them away from marijuana, those adults lose credibility pretty quickly when they're disproven. So I think we've seen in Colorado and Washington a really important shift towards reality-based marijuana education rather than trying to scare kids with the threat of criminal penalties and killed brain cells and things like that. We're basing these messages on fact, and that's, I think, something that can only be beneficial for Vermont moving forward.
Matt Simon is New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Thank you so much for talking with us today, Matt.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're getting different takes on marijuana legalization, and if you'd like to weigh in, you can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. In a few minutes, as I said, as we get some state government perspectives, we're going to look a little bit more at how we might implement legalization in Vermont and what some legislators are finding from the experiences of states that have already legalized marijuana. First, though, we're going to turn to Margot Austin. She's a student assistance program counselor at Burlington High School and a member of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont, which opposes legalization. Margot joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being on the call. It's an important subject to people on the front lines and that do the work that I do in schools. So thank you.
Well, and given the work that you do in schools, let me ask you how you see marijuana use manifesting itself in the population that you deal with at Burlington High School.
Well, and I think I want to make it broader, too, as I've been lucky enough to work in the field and represent today here on the call. I just want to say SAMVT is a very active organization, and its parents, its frontline providers, its grandparents, its people who care about the health and safety of adolescents, whether they, you know, no matter what school they go to. And so I encourage people to go to our website and certainly sign up. Having worked in school since 1994, what's been really interesting to me being on the front lines talking to thousands and thousands of young people is that, and I appreciate Matt's comments, that we don't want to send the wrong message to young people about marijuana. Absolutely not. That information needs to be scientific and fact-based. However, this continues to be a moving target because what we know about marijuana is it's a complex drug. It is fat-soluble, which, for example, alcohol is not. So very different complexities within the brain. And what we know to be true also is a moving target is the potency of marijuana. So for people who are listening and thinking about maybe their days in high school or college, the potency of marijuana and THC, which is the active chemical that gets a person high, have grown tremendously. The ways that you can use the drug, you can dape, you can vaporize, you can eat it, are all major shifts. So the science continues to need to work on making sure that we have the right information about a drug that continues to shift both how you get it into your body and also the potency of the drug. Those are major changes.
Margo, we were just talking very briefly with Matt Simon about the teenage use, and I mentioned that the Vermont Health Department, through its Youth Risk Behavior Survey and other ways, has determined that Vermont has the highest usage of marijuana consumption in terms of the number of young people who are trying it in the state. So, you know, it might seem that prevention efforts under a model where it's not legal aren't really working. So why is legalization something that you're worried about, given that we already have high rates of marijuana use among teens?
That's a great question. Well, when we're talking about health and safety for young people and we're talking about the numbers we are, we actually could be talking about certainly more. When we know perception of harm goes down, use always will follow. So legalization, perception of harm, we may be having more young people use, which is incredibly concerning. We know that brain is not fully developed till approximately age 24, 25. So the younger that people start using any drug, and we're including marijuana, which has THC in it, they are certainly going to be that much more likely to have lifetime problems with the substance. The things that I see in school on the front lines every day that greatly concern me is certainly not about death. And I want to steer the conversation away from that because I think that death absolutely happens through secondary causes and it happens with alcohol all the time with impaired driving. But students in school where we see marijuana use, we worry significantly about short-term memory and motivation and also their ability to emotionally regulate, whether or not they're feeling anxious or depressed and how that usually increases actually with continued use of marijuana rather than it getting better. So what we're seeing on the front lines in schools is certainly troubling for young people, and legalization I don't see as a solution.
What evidence do you have, at least, you know, for looking at the states that have already been experimenting so far with legalization, that suggests that legalization will increase the usage among teens?
So I know that there's some research, and I don't know, that's coming out of Colorado, and data is always going to be lagged behind changes in policy.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that in Denver alone, Denver, not the whole state of Colorado, that they've seen significant increases in eighth grade. There was some data that came out in use rates. So I think my question is actually why the rush? The cost is too high. I know Vermonters care about health and safety, and that if we don't have all the science and all the research that we need to make good policy decisions, what is the rush? Colorado and Washington could be our example to figure out in the next it was going to take 5 or 10 years to really have some good data to be able to move forward with policy here in Vermont.
Margot, aside from the worries that you have about an increase in use among teens or among young people, are there other reasons that you think that legalization is the wrong approach? I mean, looking at it more broadly, maybe even among adults.
Yeah. Certainly, we're already seeing some evidence of this, although the research, again, is hard to get. I want to talk about one thing that would be very hard to, if we were to pass this in the next legislative session, what are we doing about impaired people on the roads? So if we're going to pass a policy where we're going to legalize marijuana, recreational use, and then we're going to put people out on the roads, there is no roadside test right now, a fast test to test for THC. It's a much longer process. It needs to be, you need to get call in either even a specially trained police officer, and then you need to get a search warrant to be able to, it's just a much longer process where we do have a way to test for alcohol on the roadside. They're being developed, but we don't have that technology yet. That greatly concerns me because impaired driving is a lot more than just alcohol. And marijuana impaired driving would go up if the drug was legalized for recreational purposes. I also worry about, one of the things that I think about is thinking about commercialization and advertising, and especially how, we already look at how alcohol is advertised and the problems that are fraught with that for young people. Is that the Vermont we want 5-10 years down the road? Is marijuana being advertised and commercialized just like alcohol is?
Margot Austin is a student assistance program counselor at Burlington High School and a member of Smart Approaches to Marijuana Vermont, which opposes legalization. Margot, thanks very much for sharing your perspective today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
We're getting thoughts from our listeners. Eric says people seem to be very concerned with regulation and keeping marijuana out of the hands of minors. And there's all this talk about a new system of regulation based on other states. But why can't the state's current model for regulation of hard liquor be used as a model for the regulation of marijuana? James says there was an interview with the new Burlington police chief a couple weeks ago. He brought up an interesting point about the trafficking of drugs into the state. If marijuana were to be legalized, there would be less of a drive for traffickers to import it from elsewhere, potentially increasing the effort put into the importing of drugs like heroin, an interesting unintended consequence for a state battling with opiate addiction. And Jen says, I am a Democrat who has always leaned left of the middle, but I will be voting for whichever candidates are solidly against legalizing marijuana. Share your thoughts or questions. Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Coming up, more on marijuana legalization. We'll hear from Health Commissioner Harry Chen and State Senator Jeanette White. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're looking at where things stand with the idea of marijuana legalization. We've heard from advocates on both sides of the issue about how they're pressuring the state to act. Now we're going to hear from representatives of state government on their approach. And before we do, if you have thoughts you want to share, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Melanie muses, is it even possible to allow marijuana to be another Vermont local product without opening the doors to the national marijuana industry agenda? Michael says, yes, it should be legalized. This plant has been used for thousands of years. Those who are against it are welcome to not consume it, build with it, wear it, or use any other product made from it. The economic and societal benefits from this far outweigh any concerns the prohibitionists can muster. Let's go to Aaron calling in from Stowe. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Great topic. It's interesting for me. I just wanted to just comment, and then I'll get off the air. But I agree with both of the speakers that you've had so far. I'm in a unique situation where I profit from legalization of marijuana with my business. I own a business that provides lighters and cell phone cases with lighters attached to them to all the dispensaries in the country right now, and do a lot of work with Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg. We have all these license agreements. And on the other hand, I used to smoke marijuana quite a bit, and I actually stopped. And I stopped because of what the woman before said. It's becoming way too potent, way too intense, and it's worrying me. How are people going to handle, especially driving? But you start giving these kids this high potent wax or dabs, whatever they're calling it, and vaporizing, and then giving them a car, I think if it's not as dangerous as alcohol, it's more dangerous than alcohol. But it's something that, you know, we have to take a close look at. If it's something that we're going to deregulate, how are we going to prevent accidents and misfortune with the kids, basically, especially with the increase in THC?
Yeah, Aaron, thanks for that question. Good point. We're going to get to that in just a moment with the state senator, Jeanette White, who's going to be on the program. I want to get one more call in here. Tim in Hyde Park. Your thoughts today, Tim.
Hi. Yes, really great program. Thanks for doing this today. I'm an attorney. I've seen a lot of the law enforcement, court enforcement side of marijuana use in northern Vermont. And my position has historically been, geez, this is a lot of effort for not much societal benefit. Alcohol, from my perspective, has done a lot worse to burden society than marijuana. So my position has been, why don't we legalize? But I got to tell you, Margot's presentation, as much as I expected it to be unpersuasive, I thought her scientific approach with the scientific evidence was very interesting and worth considering. And then that, in addition to previous caller Aaron, sort of makes a compelling case. And I'm not ready to change my mind yet, but I'm listening, and I want to hear more about it, what the experts have to say. I think I'm still coming down in favor of let's legalize it and let's increase education about it and other substances, alcohol and other drugs in addition. And I think that's where I'll leave it.
Tim, thanks so much. Interesting to hear your perspective shifting even as you wait on the line to make a comment. Thank you for calling in, and thanks for sharing that. And David, who's calling in now from Ferrisburg. Hi, David. Go right ahead. You there, David? Oh, we lost David. Well, let's go to our guests now, and we'll bring more calls and comments in as we continue this conversation. Harry Chen is Vermont's health commissioner. Dr. Chen, nice to have you on the program again.
It's great to be here, Jane.
And Senator Jeanette White is a Democrat representing Windham County. Senator White, nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Jane.
So to be clear here, Senator White, you support legalization, and you plan on bringing up a bill in 2016 when the legislature is back in session. That's accurate, right?
Yes.
And Commissioner Chen, you seem to have said a couple different things about marijuana. What's your position?
Well, I'd say, Jane, you know, it's important for me to ask myself, what is the best thing I can do for the process and the consideration of this very important policy issue? And I, where I come down on right now is, A, it's too early to say yes or no. We don't even know what it looks like. But I think it's most important to provide credible evidence to the policymakers and the legislature about what the health effects will be from legalization and how we can potentially mitigate them. And then see where the process ends. And obviously, this is an important conversation we're going to have. I think it's vitally important for me to be a part of it.
So, Senator White, given that, and we're going to, you know, hear more of that health perspective from Commissioner Chen as we talk, we've heard from a couple of listeners who are saying, you know, I'm interested to hear more, but how are we going to regulate it? How are we going to deal with these public safety concerns and the issue of drugged driving? How are we going to approach education for teens and for others to talk about the dangers around marijuana? So we can break some of that down, but what are you seeing so far and how you would attack the idea of regulating legal marijuana?
Well, if I can respond to a couple things that I heard over the beginning of the program. Last session, our committee took about 50 hours of testimony, and we heard from everyone. We heard from people from Colorado. We heard from the prevention community. We heard from people both in favor and not in favor. And for me, it's a personal choice by adults. We'll never completely get rid of kids using it. But what we've heard from kids, and I went to the Governor's Institute this summer, and what I heard from the kids was it's much easier to get marijuana than alcohol. Because if you want to get alcohol, it's regulated, it's controlled, you've got to find somebody over 21 to buy it for you. You don't have to do that with marijuana. You can go in the bathroom at the high school and buy it from somebody. So we have a parallel market that's already out there. It's a parallel economy, actually. And we need to bring that into the sunshine and actually regulate it and tax it. we by doing that, we can have money for prevention. And our goal is to say that at least half of whatever is generated, I don't know what that'll be because we haven't set a tax structure yet, but at least half will go for education and prevention.
And I think the RAND study suggested somewhere between $20 and $75 million would be a possibility.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we're not doing this. We're not doing this for the money. We're doing it because we're bringing too many people into the legal system because of the way we prohibit it, and we're not being honest about it. And prohibition hasn't worked. So here's a couple things that we're looking at. Under 21. Strictly prohibited, just like alcohol. If you are under 21, you use it, you have it, you're going to suffer the same consequences as if you have alcohol. If you sell it to someone under 21, bad. So the potency will always have to be on the label so people will know what it is. We're probably not going to go with edibles, and I know some people are concerned about that, but we probably won't go there. When you buy something in a retail store, you'll know what you're getting. You're not going to, when you buy it on the street corner, you don't know if it's laced with rat poison or oregano, which is pretty harmless, but you don't know. So now you'll know. We're going to, only Vermonters will be able to get a permit to be a grower or a retailer. Only in Vermonters can make investments. We'll have a limit on the size of the cultivations. And for impaired drivers, you shouldn't be driving if you're impaired, regardless of why you're impaired. And we are beefing up the drug recognition experts. And one of the interesting things, and I know Harry will probably, I don't know if he'll comment on this or not, but what we heard from the Department of Health when they testified was, right now, we've done a good job of decreasing or increasing people's responsibility around drinking responsibly and not being on the road, having a designated driver. Because it's regulated, we can do that. They can't do that with marijuana. They can't have a campaign that says, don't smoke and drive, because it's illegal. So we can have if it's legal, we can now have those kinds of campaigns and warn people about the problems of impaired drinking and or driving. That is an issue, and we'll have to deal with it.
So, Commissioner Chen, what do you think when you hear Senator White talk about, you know, some of the precautions that she would take or some of the stops that she would put into legislation? Does that change or color your opinion?
Well, I certainly think that I'm encouraged by the thoughtful way that Senator White has taken the testimony over the past session. Some of the important items she mentioned in terms of prohibition from kids having access to it and understanding the challenges of drug driving. And I would tend to agree with her. I mean, even though we all worry about what's going to happen, we haven't done very well already with what the system we have now, insofar as we have a very high use rates of marijuana and a very low perception of harm from the use of marijuana, especially in our kids. So I think there's opportunity to really push that prevention message and that harm mm-hmm. message, and that's certainly something that I would be very supportive of doing if we did go the route of legalization.
Let me see if I can get just a couple of quick calls in here to help us sort of add context to this. Pam's calling in from Calais. Pam, can you be quick but just share your thoughts with us?
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from the perspective of growing up where marijuana was used regularly around my circle of friends growing up, and I'm sure a lot of them now that they're older adults would really want it legalized, but I'm calling from the perspective of a mother of a 12-year-old that I really don't want it legalized because I feel he's been involved in this conversation with me, and he's like, well, if you legalize it, then you're saying it's okay to do. And I think as a society, we really need to be careful about that. And what we're saying to our young people is what's permissive in our society.
And let me ask you, do you talk to your son about alcohol use, given that?
Yeah, and alcohol use, we're saying that that's permissive, and it's permissive at a certain age. But that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that kids aren't going to try it younger. And even though kids are going to try marijuana in school, to go to that step of legalization, we're already at legalized alcohol. We're not going to go back to prohibition for alcohol. It's just too much. And I have a glass of wine now and then, and I partake in that, and I admit that. But I do it very responsibly, and I don't know if we can do that
with marijuana. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So, Senator White, what would you say to Pam? Because you're supporting legalization, and here's Pam saying, as a mom, this is really problematic for me.
I think that it should be controlled. It should be regulated. Kids under 21 should not have it. And I think that what we've done is we've confused the two words use and abuse. And when Pam was talking about having a glass of wine, but doing it responsibly, there are a ton of people out there that smoke, but smoke responsibly. Just because you smoke marijuana does not mean you're abusing it. So I think that we need to be truthful with the kids, and we need to say, if you're under 21, stay away from it. And so,
yeah. So Commissioner Chen, you know, on that, and given that Vermont already has the highest rate of teen usage, do you think there is a way that we could have legalization and better education and maybe reduce the number of teens using marijuana?
I do, Jane. And let me give you an example of another substance, tobacco. I mean, tobacco, mm-hmm. The reality is it's the number one preventable killer in this country, and yet you can buy it in the stores. And we've seen a day where tobacco use in kids was 40%, and now we're at 13%. Mm-hmm. So I have to be optimistic that we can actually move that needle by using different strategies in terms of policy, whether it be education, whether it be taking marijuana and putting it out in the open and restricting its use. I think there's opportunity there.
Well, that's great. And you know, this is a good point to pause the conversation. And I say pause because certainly, as we have established, this is a conversation that's going to be ongoing and a big topic of conversation in Montpelier come January. Harry Chen is Vermont's health commissioner. Senator Jeanette White is a Democrat representing Windham County. Thank you both for sharing your perspectives today.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
Coming up, why disturbing allegations of racism in the Rutland City Police Department dating back to the early 2000s are resurfacing now. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In recent weeks, allegations of racial profiling and officer misconduct by two former members of the Rutland City Police Department have been making headlines. Part of a 2013 lawsuit against the city brought by former Rutland City Police Officer Andrew Todd. Todd was the only African-American police officer for the nearly 8 years he worked for the city. Tomorrow, a trial date is expected to be announced in the case. VPR's Nina Keck joins us now to talk about the suit and its impact on Rutland. Nina, nice to talk with you again.
You as well, Jane.
Can you give us some of the background on this case and why it's stirring so much anger and frustration in Rutland again?
Sure. Andrew Todd worked for the Rutland City Police Department for 2004 through 2012, and he alleges that during his last few years on the force, he was subjected to racial discrimination. Specifically, he alleges in court documents that two former officers, Sergeant John Johnson, who was Todd's direct supervisor, and Earl Frank Post, used racist language on the job. Todd also alleges that Post and Johnson used unethical racial profiling techniques to make arrests and traffic stops, and that they handled black suspects in a racially biased manner. Todd also alleged that Post threatened to assault him, and that was something another officer reported witnessing.
So Andrew Todd says he made his complaints known about those issues within the department long before he filed suit. What happened?
That's right. According to court documents, Todd alleges that he repeatedly went to Lieutenant Kevin Gino with his concerns, but that nothing was done. And there's some dispute here. Todd alleges that he wrote up a formal complaint, gave it to Gino in 2010. Gino states in the court records that he never got the letter, and it wasn't until more than a year later that Gino began an internal affairs investigation into Todd's complaint. It also states in court records that Kevin Gino and John Johnson were good friends, and Todd alleges that because of that friendship, Gino began a retaliatory investigation against him, which he says created a hostile work environment that eventually pushed him out in 2012, and Todd's been working as a state trooper since.
So there was, though, an investigation into Todd's claims that you mentioned. So what was the outcome of that investigation?
Lieutenant Gino's investigation concluded that the racial profiling allegations and other allegations, including Johnson having sex while on duty with a female drug informant, Gino found those allegations were unfounded. And higher-ups in the chain of command signed off on those findings. About the same time, Andrew Todd went to Mayor Christopher Lewis with his complaints. The mayor says he immediately contacted Chief Bossie, who was chief at the time, and requested action. At that point, Post and Johnson were put on administrative leave, and the city hired an outsider, former Burlington police chief and Vermont Public Safety Commissioner Thomas Tremblay, to do an internal affairs investigation of Post and Johnson.
So Tremblay did investigate. What did he find?
He looked at a bunch of different allegations of racial bias and racial profiling. There were allegations of inappropriate use of informants, as I mentioned before, allegations of officers having sex with drug informants while on duty, of falsifying timesheets, a lot of sloppy paperwork allegations. Tremblay states in his report that there was a preponderance of evidence of police department policy violations, but he found no criminal wrongdoing. But there were a number of disturbing findings brought up in the report, Jane, findings that Tremblay himself said or stated in his report would expose the Rutland Police Department and the city to significant liability.
Like what? What kind of findings?
For instance, Johnson's drug arrest record showed that he was arresting black offenders 87% of the time, meaning 7 out of 8 of Johnson's drug arrests were African Americans, comparing that to the rest of the department, which had a 14%. All officers questioned by Tremblay expressed concern of lack of effective direction or strategy at the police department. And this one really got me. Johnson himself is quoted in Tremblay's report as saying part of the problem was that the police department had no checks and balances. I'm quoting here. He said the rules had pretty much gone out of the window on a lot of things.
Nina, those are pretty disturbing findings. I mean, given that that's what the Tremblay report found, what happened?
Well, the Tremblay report wasn't released in a broad sense, and I think that's what's created so much consternation in Rutland. When Tremblay's report was finished in the spring of 2012, so remember this is several years ago, former Rutland City Police Chief Anthony Bossie had retired. He'd left the department after 35 years, and Jim Baker had taken over as chief. The officers that had been investigated were also no longer on the force. Earl Frank Post had resigned. John Johnson had retired. And Baker said in a press release that the internal review had been completed and closed. There was no criminal wrongdoing. And I think the sense that he gave at the time is the proper authorities in the city were brought up to speed on this and we're going to move on. But basically, the public didn't get a whole lot.
Okay, so that's clearly why we didn't hear much about the Tremblay report at the time. We're just hearing about it now because of this lawsuit?
Well, yeah. When Andrew Todd filed his lawsuit in January of 2013, the Tremblay report was a confidential personnel file. It was not part of the public record. And so while journalists like myself had been reporting some of the allegations in the Todd lawsuit, the Tremblay report was not something we had access to until this summer. That's when it was attached by Todd's attorney, John Paul Fagnett. I should say redacted versions of the Tremblay report were attached with some edited video depositions to a court motion. It was accepted by the judge, and so it became in the public domain, and that's why you're seeing news accounts of it now.
You know, it sounds like some city officials either weren't given the report or were perhaps in some cases told not to read the report when it originally came out. What are they saying now about this case?
Now they're saying that they feel as though they were adequately briefed. They did say that, you know, city attorneys told them it was a confidential document. Larry Jensen, the police commission chair, told me that Chief Baker had briefed him fully, and he felt confident in the way Baker had handled the situation, that Bossie was no longer chief and Post and Johnson were gone, and that the department was moving forward in a positive way, and he felt confident to take Baker's word for that.
Nina, what happens now as this all moves forward?
Well, there's a status conference scheduled for tomorrow morning, and Judge Helen Tour is expected to set a trial date. If the parties don't settle, the police at that trial date will get a chance to provide their side of the story, and Andrew Todd will have his day in court, and we'll hear perhaps a lot more detail on what really happened.
And in Rutland, do you think this is something that people are upset about? Is that feeling going to continue?
I think people are upset, and it's mostly just that they're angry that they didn't know a lot of the details, and some people are saying that the details were squashed. I think lawyers will point out that when you have an internal affairs investigation, it's hard to let that information out without a threat of a lawsuit. So there's a fine line that people have to thread with regard to this type of information. But yeah, there's still a lot of anger.
That's VPR's Nina Kak. Nina, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you can see all of Nina's reporting on this story at VPR.net. Financial fraud and scams are sometimes tough to uncover, and older people are often the victims of this kind of abuse. Tomorrow on this program, we'll look at the work that Vermont's Attorney General's Office and the AARP are doing to prevent scams on elderly people. You can tell us your family's experience. Write to Vermont Edition at VPR.net and join us for the program tomorrow. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.